sure as God made green apples, someday the Chicago Cubs are going to be in a World Series.
Here's the 0-1. This is going to be a tough play. Bryant, the Cubs win the World Series!
You are Locked On Cubs, your daily Chicago Cubs podcast.
But we didn't come here to drink beer! We came here to win this ballgame!
Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
I said to the Uber boy, I said, take me out with the crowd!
What's going on, Cubs fans? You are listening to Locked On Cubs, part of the Locked On Network, your team every day. I am your host, Sean Sears, and on today's episode, we bring on Ryan Davis to talk about kind of an interesting report from Jesse Rogers. He dropped somewhat of a news bomb on ESPN 1000 yesterday, talking about Chris Bryant and Yu Darvish and how Darvish at this point, he at least in Rogers' mind, was more likely to be traded than Chris Bryant at this point. And Jonathan Hood and David Kaplan kind of went in on Chris Bryant a little bit. And Ryan and I kind of talked through it a little bit because we just didn't feel like it was warranted to go at Bryant quite like that. So we talked through that whole situation for a while, actually, and just kind of get through the idea that they were talking about, essentially, you know, could it make more sense to move Darvish than it could to move Chris Bryant at this point. We also talk about Scott Boras's comments about how he says that Chris Bryant and the Cubs have something cooking or something along the lines of that. And we also touch on the Jackie Bradley Jr. rumors that came out and how he could possibly be a fit for the Cubs, but Ryan and I don't really see it. So all that and more here on today's episode of Locked On Cubs, which is brought to you by Built Bar. Head to BuiltBar.com to get some of the best tasting protein bars you ever have had. Use promo code LOCKEDON to save yourself 20% off your next order of Built Bars. Head to BuiltBar.com. Use promo code LOCKEDON. And then also check out one of the newest Locked On podcasts. It's Locked On Bets. Betting on the Chicago Cubs doesn't have to be a guessing game. If you listen to the new Locked On Bets hosted by your boy Q and handicapping expert Lee Sterling, get daily picks and quick hitting advice to make the smartest possible wagers. Subscribe to Locked On Bets podcast brought to you by betonline.ag wherever you get podcasts. That is Locked On Bets. So check that out, guys. But with that, here is our episode with Ryan Davis as we kind of walk through these interesting reports from Jesse Rogers. All right, Cubs fans, joined with me today is Ryan Davis as we jump on here to talk a little Cubby baseball. There's got some news, not anything. I mean, it's more news than we've had recently, I guess, but some things to talk about. But Ryan, how are you doing today?
I'm doing all right. Yeah, like you said, there's at least things to talk about on this podcast. So that's always a win when we're in early December and the market's not really moving.
Exactly. Yeah, it's been quiet. We've heard a few little rumors here and there. There was a little thing popped up about the Cubs and Phillies being interested in Jackie Bradley Jr. You know, who knows how serious that is. We can touch on that in a second. But we got some bigger news today from Jesse Rogers, who kind of dropped it was the same report, but kind of dropped two big bombs in this report on ESPN 1000 with Jay Hood and Cap talking about specifically Chris Bryant and Yu Darvish. And he kind of said that he thinks it's more likely that Darvish could get traded and that Bryant stays on this team by opening day. I mean, definitely kind of the exact opposite of what we've heard these last few days. But what did you think from that report, Ryan?
Well, I kind of wasn't surprised by it. The only thing that really surprised me is that nobody had said it yet. So I was thinking maybe the Cubs really weren't looking at all at trading Yu Darvish if it wasn't something that was being talked about a little more broadly among especially the media that follows the team.
Sure.
But now that it's out there, I think it's, I mean, for the Cubs situation as they describe it, it's a no-brainer. There's two sides of this. There's the what I wish they could do versus what they probably should do given their situation. What I wish they would do is keep Yu Darvish because he was absolutely outstanding in the short 2020 season as an extension of his second half in 2019. And I think that, you know, he's obviously getting up there in age. He's had Tommy John surgery. He's going to turn 35 in August. So realistically, you know, when people think about John Lester and the way Cubs fans view him as the way he's declined, Lester was never a throw at 98 miles an hour guy. He did throw harder when he was younger, but you know, people figured Lester would be able to age better because of his style of pitching, and he's been able to live at the low 90s and still pitch pretty well. But Lester's only 2.5 years older than Darvish. And Darvish is a guy who, you know, again, has had Tommy John surgery. He's had other injury issues in his career. He, you know, has a lot of pitches that he throws, but he also does rely on throwing, you know, mid to upper 90s. And I think Cubs fans can remember what that, what those lower velocity starts that he had looked like in 2018, especially when he was injured. So that's kind of a long way of saying I'd love for them to keep him around because he's such a dynamic, interesting pitcher. He's very good at what he does, and he's also extremely marketable and fan friendly. Mm-hmm. So I'd love for them to keep him around and make a run at it and try and win a World Series with him in 2021. But if you're talking about punting 2021, I don't know that keeping him around beyond that is the best idea. Not that he couldn't be great in 2022 and 2023 when he's owed more money and he'll be 36, 37 years old. It's possible, but it just seems more likely that somebody else at this stage could get something out of him that his trade value might never be higher than it is right now. And I've got those stats since the middle of July 2019. He started 25 games for the Cubs, just under 160 innings pitched, 12 K per nine, 1.2 walk per nine. So he's literally striking out 10 times the batters that he's walking, with a 2.54 FIP and I think an ERA somewhat similar to that. I think I lost that number. 2.240 ERA. So really good. In basically 25 starts, his last 25 starts for the Cubs. So it's legitimate what you saw in 2020. It's not some, you know, aberration where you could look at it as he had seven really amazing starts in a row, and then outside of that was decent. In a short season, you can always split hairs that way. But so my position, I would say, on this is very complicated and very nuanced. I'd love for them to keep him around because I'd love for them to win a World Series in 2021. Based on what we know and what all the other moves they've made are, it looks like they know they're not going to compete for a World Series in 2021. So now would be the time to, if you can, move Yu Darvish, get that salary relief that they so badly want, and then also get some prospects that might help you be a better team in 2022 and beyond. Where's your take on this? Where are you? Are you about the same?
Yeah, for the most part. I mean, like you said, and I know, like, I think I remember sharing a tweet from you. Actually, I think it was Herb Lawrence, actually, that shared it from Locked On White Sox. Something about, like, a White Sox trade that had, like, Kopech and I think it was Nick Madrigal for Darvish. And we kind of, like, thought about, like, what do you think about trading Darvish? And your response was, like, very similar now. It's kind of like, you know, I mean, if the Cubs are committing to trading Darvish, like, I don't hate the idea. It makes sense because you might get more assets potentially. He's a little more controllable. Obviously, he's coming off a near Cy Young season. And like you said, since July of 2019, essentially, he's been damn near one of the best pitchers in baseball. And it's easy to see how you could maybe get multiple pieces back just simply because of the control and the season he's coming off of. Whereas, like, Chris Bryant, the Cubs have, you know, maybe not come out and directly said this, but they essentially put Chris Bryant out on the market last year before his grievance was even settled, just to kind of get an idea of what it was like. And, you know, teams, I think at this point, I think the Cubs pretty much know, like, what they want to offer for Bryant, especially with a year less of control. And, you know, now you're talking about a pretty bad 2020 season that probably doesn't make a huge impact, but could. If you're talking about, like, what value you can get back, trading Darvish might make sense because he's never going to be more valuable than he is now, likely. Like, he'll probably still be really good, but will he put up the same kind of numbers? We don't know. And we've seen how quickly it can just kind of fade. Because just as quickly as he's figured the things out and been all of a sudden elite, like, you can't forget, like, this guy was looking like Tyler Chatwood in moments, like, walking more batters than he was striking out, really struggling to throw strikes at times. And then, like you said, too, that velocity dip, like, the biggest thing for Yu Darvish is that he's got a fastball that hovers in around 97, 98, 99 miles an hour. And if that's your biggest asset, the guy with Tommy John surgery, it's kind of worrisome if you're the Cubs.
Yeah, and we've seen Darvish be successful at 95, 96. And he throws so many pitches. That's what, you know, part of what makes him so unique. And I think
for people
who love pitching, having Yu Darvish and Kyle Hendricks as your 1-2, that's two of the most unique pitchers in the game. So it makes, even with a team that overall isn't going to be, you know, probably all that great, at least having those guys starting 40% of your games would be at least fun or interesting. So I understand, as fans especially, fighting up against not wanting them to trade Darvish. And I think fans are right to feel that way, because fans should want the best players on the field. But given everything we know, I think trading him now, you know, like, we're going to talk about this in a little bit, but Anthony DeSclafani got 1 year, $6 million coming off an injury-filled season where he only pitched, I think, 6 or 7 games, didn't pitch all that well, and in general has been either bad or injured most of his career, really only had one solid 2019. That's all he's going off of. He got 1 year, $6 million from the Giants plus incentives. We'll talk more about that, but, you know, if that's the rate starting pitchers are going for, you have to imagine Trevor Bauer and Marcus Stroman and a few of the other free agents are going to get some pretty big offers. And Darvish at 3 years, $60 million, for a team that doesn't want to pay, you know, throw out a 7 or 8 year deal right now, you know, that might be the best deal out there for a contender that, you know, 3 years, $60 million, their windows, you know, right now, like maybe the Yankees, you know, if they're looking for starting pitching. I don't know if they are, but a team that's in position to win right now could be the best fit for a Cubs deal for Yu Darvish.
Yeah, because I mean, finding starting pitching, especially quality starting pitching, is hard. It's one of the hardest things in baseball to do. And if you're a team like you said, like the Yankees, I don't know if the Nationals quite qualify. They're like one of those teams that's in like a weird, like they could either go for it or blow it all up. A lot of those teams that are like hovering between that, they decide they do want to go for it, need another arm. Yu Darvish could be an interesting option, and he probably, like you said, probably wouldn't take too much to get. I don't know. I would assume, like, I mean, I know this report here from Jesse Rogers, and then the show with Cap and Hood shortly after put out some pretty interesting talks about like Chris Bryant specifically, but like, I don't know, like I just think it's probably getting really hard for the Cubs to try and move Chris Bryant, and they're kind of acknowledging that and saying, well, what can we possibly get from Yu Darvish, especially when you're looking at what, you know, the Rangers did with Lance Lynn, like not similar, but I mean, I don't know. Did they trade him, or did he?
Yeah. Lance Lynn,
he got traded, right?
Yeah. He went to the White Sox.
Did he? And he was traded. He wasn't signed, right?
Yeah. Fairly positive. Yeah. They traded him for Dane Dunning and somebody else.
That's what it was. Yeah. So like, you see a deal like that happen, and you know, I would assume that the Cubs would probably be able to get maybe a little bit better prospect than Dane Dunning. And he's okay. He's not bad. He's probably like,
he's a back-end starter.
Yeah. Like, I would compare him to like, yeah, exactly. He's probably like your fourth or fifth guy. So that's not bad. But like, if that's what you get back, at least it's a pitcher. Maybe you get, hopefully you're getting more back than just the back-end starter. But if you're trying to relieve salary and make this move, maybe Darvish gets you more back. So I'm interested in that. I wouldn't also be surprised if someone told Rogers this, to float this idea out to try and generate interest in Darvish. Like, you always have to think about that aspect of it, especially when like no one's saying anything close to that.
And another interesting aspect of it is Jesse Rogers used to be just Cubs beat for ESPN, right? But this last year he moved to more of a national beat. So it could be that the information that he's getting about Darvish being available is not necessarily coming from the Cubs. It could be coming from other teams who are telling him they've had conversations about Chris Bryant, or I'm sorry, right, about Yu Darvish.
Right. Yeah. And that's and you just never know like how that's being reported or put out there. But I did want to talk kind of quickly about some of the comments that came out about Chris Bryant. I mean, I know we were talking beforehand. This is pretty bad. Let me just read the quote for you here. This is Jonathan Hood on the Jay Hood or Cap and Hood show. It's Hood talking about shortly after Chris Bryant, or after Rogers reporting that Bryant could be more likely to stay. He said, I liked Bryant when he was quiet and hit the hell out of baseballs. When he came to spring training a couple years ago and laid his cards on the table, the 1 hour press conference, what? Dude, who's this guy? I'll talk all day about my contract. Cubs never offered me one. Excuse me, what? It's like, first of all, you don't talk in public about your contract. That's why, to me, he made a complete heel turn. What happened to Chris Bryant? Heel turn? I know the article where I'm reading this from was written by Evan Altman at Cubs Insider, and he kind of compared it to like a somewhat shut up and dribble comment. It's kind of how it feels, and that's definitely how it read. I mean, what the heck? I just don't really get why are you taking a shot at Chris Bryant?
Right, yeah. Of all the guys that you could take shots at that are cheap, that's an interesting one to pick to cheap shot. I don't know. I didn't like the tenor of that conversation. And, you know, David Kaplan, who's been on this show with you, mm-hmm. is always very generous with his time. He said some things that, you know, Evan wrote in the story. It was basically he was calling Chris Bryant a liar. And I didn't listen to it. I'm only quoting Evan, I'm quoting Evan paraphrasing Kaplan. So take it for what it's worth. But, you know, basically calling him a liar, that seems like another extreme. And I wouldn't expect that. So, the conversation around Chris Bryant has gotten very negative among the media, and it's not just about his performance, and you know, that kind of thing is surprising at the very least. And it kind of like, you know, I feel like it came in a story where the bigger story is Darvish, because you know, he was the runner up for Cy Young, but you know, the media kind of dogging on Bryant, that was a little surprising.
I thought it was pretty disappointing too, because like who of all the guys, Chris Bryant, like what, he's not even taking a shot at you. And I think Cap more than likely feels the heat on this too, because I know, you know, he was the one that made that big declaration that the Cubs had offered Bryant something north of $200 million as an extension, and he turned that down. I know Evan talks about in this article, which I'll link in our description for everyone, so you don't have to go searching for it. It'll be right here in the description for the podcast. But he talks about how like he's had Kaplan on his show. He's asked him about this extension, and he's kind of given like a different type of caveat for it, how it could be like boosters or something like that. But Bryant shot that down entirely in spring training. And Evan, a person who's close with Chris Bryant's father, who should probably know what's going on, has kind of said like, you know, that camp, Chris Bryant's camp, seems to all kind of be like, yeah, we don't know what the heck the Cubs are talking about. And, you know, I don't want to come at Dave Kaplan at all. Like you said, he's been a nice guy, but at the same time too, it's like, hey, he's saying he didn't, you know, like whether you heard this or not, this is the guy. Like, it's his contract. Like, why would you not take him? What has he ever done to not take him at face value? You know?
Right. And there are ways that this gets worked out, where both parties could be like 50% right. I mean, it, you know, David Kaplan hears that Chris Bryant turned down a $200 million extension and he reports it. And then Chris Bryant says, whoa, wait, I never did that. It's very possible that the Cubs went with an extension number that had escalators that could have brought it up to $200 million. They brought that to Scott Boras, and Scott Boras and Chris Bryant had already worked out basic terms that needed to be met before Boras would even waste Bryant's time talking to him about a possible extension. And maybe the Cubs just hadn't met those terms, and Boras was negotiating and didn't bother to involve Chris Bryant. And at that point, the Cubs said, all right, somebody in the organization's going to leak this so that we can make Chris Bryant look bad. And I think that, you know, that's probably one of the roots of what has kind of soured that relationship, I think.
Sure.
I don't want to speak for Bryant or the Cubs, but it seems like things have, you know, maybe they're at peace with where things are, and the Cubs know he's going to leave, and he knows he's probably going to be walking away when his deal's done if they haven't traded him. So it all seems to come back to that moment in time. And and I'm not saying that the way I described it is exactly how it happened, because I don't know. But it could just be that there was some miscommunication involving that report, and that's kind of where everything's gone south.
Yeah, exactly. And it, with those type of conversations, like you said, like so many things can be misconstrued or misreported or misinterpreted. Like maybe Chris Bryant saw an offer sheet for something. And then, you know, like you said, the escalators go into that. Or maybe, you know, and this is completely on par with Scott Boras. Maybe he's negotiating for Bryant and not checking in with him because they've maybe had that conversation, or maybe they've been trying to make this extension work for 6 years. So
right. I mean, as people, you know, I'm sure lots of people know how negotiations work on a larger scale. You don't always go back to whoever you're negotiating on behalf of with, okay, here's this offer, here's this offer, here's this offer, until you have one that you think is worth taking. And, you know, a deal that has escalators that could go up to $200 million for Chris Bryant at the time that we were discussing this was maybe in the ballpark, but you could understand Chris Bryant not taking that offer at that time, given his value and, you know, any of the other details we don't know about it.
Right. Plus, like Manny Machado was getting a deal for $300 million. Bryce Harper was signing for $330 million. Trout, a couple months after that, got the 400 something million deal. Like, I'm sure Chris Bryant was like, okay, so 200 escalator deal. Maybe not.
Yeah. Right. Like maybe I'll just keep mashing the ball and over the course of my arbitration years make, you know, $20 million, $25 million, whatever it might be in arbitration money. Maybe I'll just take those and then take my free agency when I get it. And, you know, again, we're talking about a deal, a hypothetical deal that we don't know the
right
details of, that would have bought out some of his free agent years. And I'm guessing Chris Bryant is thinking, the way you manipulated my service time, I'm not all that interested in cutting you some sort of, you know, deal by, you know, after basically pushing back me getting to free agency a year. So mm-hmm. there's a lot of reasons why this hypothetical contract, we don't know the details of why Chris Bryant might have turned it down. So that said, it could just be that they had terms set about, hey, if you're in conversation with the Cubs about a new contract for me, here's the years and the money and the escalators that we need to be hitting at minimum before I want to know about the offer, before I need to, for you to come to me before we say no. And it could just be that Cubs offer that they leaked to David Kaplan just didn't meet that threshold. And Boras, being the negotiator that he is and the veteran of this and, you know, considered one of the best in the business at representing his clients, maybe he just determined that it wasn't something worth bringing to Chris Bryant, that he could turn it down himself.
Right. It also is worth mentioning that, speaking of Scott Boras, he has told, was speaking about Bryant and the Cubs, saying the Cubs know KB very well. They have great plans for him. And then that just like reads like a Donald Trump tweet, but it does. It's so weird. But I guess that's, I would, they've got plans, Ryan.
He's very beautiful.
Yeah. He's a beautiful man.
Yeah. I mean, I agree they have plans for him. They're either going to try and sign him long term, or they're going to try and trade him for prospects. Big plans.
Yeah. The best plans. Only the best. Only the best plans. But yeah, I thought that was weird. But I mean, yeah, this is just a strange kind of, this whole report was just very weird. I really just didn't know what to think of it. I thought it was weird too as well. We got a report from Mike Rizzo, the Washington Nationals GM, said that they hadn't had any serious conversations about Chris Bryant in probably 2 years. That he's not a big guy on the radar. He wasn't last year or this year. He's a great player, but from this point in time where we're at, where we have in our farm system, where we're going, we think we can allocate our dollars and prospect capital in another way. And I know he did also kind of like have like, it basically read as a subtweet to the Cubs saying like, we don't feel like trading multiple prospects away for a 1 year player. Just like, yeah. That was just a tweet I saw. That was just a quote from him. So it's like, okay, so that's Chris Bryant. I don't know.
Well, didn't that come on the heels of Dave Martinez saying that, oh, we talk about Chris Bryant all the time or whatever.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So like this could also be damage control, you know, trying to like, why would you bother responding?
Right.
If your manager says that and it's not true, why would you bother responding that it's not true? It just seems like Mike Rizzo showing his cards. Like,
yeah, right.
Like, oh, Dave Martinez admitted that we're talking about trading for Chris Bryant. and we're actually talking about trading for Chris Bryant. We're actually trying with the Cubs to trade for Chris Bryant. So now I got to go out there and tell everybody that we have no interest in trading for Chris Bryant. So because I feel like it gives me some sort of leverage, like it. Whatever.
I hate it. It's so dumb, man.
It's a bad poker face, is what it was. It was very silly.
I know we were talking beforehand, before we jumped on, that we saw a contract for Anthony DeSclafani, and you were saying that the contract seemed to be somewhat of a layout for what you'd expect maybe Tyler Chatwood should get. You want to dive into that a little bit more for a sec?
Yeah, I mean, when you look at them just on the surface, they're similar guys. I think they're about the same age, maybe a year apart. They both have had injury issues. Chatwood has the two Tommy John surgeries. I think DeSclafani's had it once. Both of them coming off of short, you know, kind of up and down seasons. Chatwood had those great first two starts, and then he got blown up real bad, and then he got injured. DeSclafani, same thing, you know, kind of just a few games pitched as a starter, not very good overall. I think he had an ERA over 7. So getting that 1 year, $6 million plus, I think up to $250,000 in bonuses for, I think, innings pitched. I feel like those guys, you should view them on the same level if you're giving them a 1 year prove it deal. But the talent is about the same. If DeSclafani got $6 million plus a little bit in incentives, I think that's probably where the market might be for Chatwood, maybe closer to $5 million. So if that's the case, do you see that as a possibility for the Cubs? And, you know, maybe even assume that Chatwood might be more favorable about staying with the Cubs and maybe even take a deal with just a little bit less money, if you think he might be inclined. So yeah, that's, what do you think about that?
Yeah, I don't hate the idea. And I think that contract, like we were talking about, like I don't see Tyler Chatwood getting any more or slightly less, you know, like I would see him getting pretty close to what DeSclafani would get, because that comp is real similar. So like you were saying, like $5-6 million probably for Chatwood. If he wanted to come back for the Cubs for slightly less, even, like, obviously, I mean, they would love that. But I would like that. I mean, I'm okay with that. I think you want to have at least a couple veterans, and at least Chatwood's familiar with Ivy. He's familiar with the player development team, like the scouting department. Obviously, all those groups, while smaller, he's going to be working with that same group that did find some success with him last year. So if you want to play with that, I mean, like, who knows what we're getting out of this 2021 season. But at the very least, you need pitching depth, and he could be that and maybe then some. And I like that move.
Yeah, especially if you end up trading a guy like Darvish out of your rotation, you're going to need to sign a few pitchers. So getting a guy like Chatwood, who, you know, maybe you just pencil him as number 6 and see if he can beat one of those guys in spring trainings to notch him out of the rotation and actually stay healthy, pitch well. That could be a guy that, if he has a healthy first half and is anything, you know, even a shade of what he looked like in those first two starts in 2020, just be healthy and pitch well out of the rotation, that could be a guy you'd be looking to trade for some prospects at the trade deadline. So there could be value there if that's where he falls financially. And I didn't ever think he was going to get much more than that. It's just interesting to see that DeSclafani got so much. He got a lot more than I kind of would have expected. I would have expected him to be more about $4 million or 3.5 million, based on his history. So if Chatwood's about the same, I feel like I would take that risk for sure.
I would too. And I think what you're saying is right. That's pretty much on the nose there for the most part with a guy like Chatwood and, you know, his history or whatnot. But you look at, like, what's going on with the market, at least it's nice, at least for the players standpoint, they're getting a little bit more than I think I was expecting. I thought there'd be a lot more tight penny pinching. And there's some guys, like you said, like DeSclafani, probably got $1.5 million, almost $2 million more than I think most people would have projected him at or expected him to get. And that's good. So a plus for the players, maybe not a plus for, like, fans that want to see the Cubs spend money, but, you know, good for the players.
Well, it does seem like there's more spending going on for pitching than for hitting right now.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, 100% for sure. And you would think, like, I would say, like, in a normal season, and Chatwood had let's say like thrown close to 120 innings, like 10 million is probably what you would get for a starter, even at his caliber, normal, you know, things aside, maybe a little less than 10 million, but something like that you would assume. So I don't know, not as big of a decrease as I was expecting, but last thing I wanted to touch on before we wrap up, I know I teased this at the beginning. I appreciate you reminding me, Ryan, we almost left the show without talking about it. But Jackie Bradley Jr. I thought that was an interesting name. I'm not necessarily wild about it, but it sounds like the Cubs have shown some interest in him. It would allow the Cubs to slide Ian Happ into left field for a market that's kind of got a lot of corner outfielders but not a ton of center fielders. Maybe the Cubs want to make a move for a guy like Bradley Jr. What did you think? Maybe not even just for Bradley Jr., but a player in his mold.
Yeah, offensively I'm not a huge fan of it, but
right, that's the part I hate too. But
yeah, but defensively, if it's a shorter term deal worth, you know, not a ton of money, I think that makes a lot of sense. But you'd be very bad against left-handed pitching throughout your entire outfield, right? So yeah, like if you had Happ in left, he's not so great against lefties. Jackie Bradley Jr. is left-handed, he'd be in center field. I don't have the numbers right in front of me, I'm pulling them up, but I do remember for his career he's not much of a left-handed hitter against lefties. Yeah, 685 OPS career.
Ooh.
So, and then you got Hayward and Wright, who pretty much, I think a lot of his very good 2020 was related to the fact that he didn't always have to be in there against left-handed pitching. So it's like you would basically have an A lineup and a B lineup in your outfield. like, oh, starting against a lefty, B team, you're in.
Yeah.
They have to have six outfielders. I guess you could move Bryant to left field for you know, left-handed pitching, and maybe you'd put Happ in center if you're trying to get him to come around against lefties because he is a switch hitter, and then sign somebody to stick in right field, and then you can put Bodie at third base. It makes sense, you could do it, but yeah, it would be very odd to have essentially two teams, one team that faces righties and one team that faces lefties.
Yeah.
But yeah, if you take away the offensive part of it, which, you know, Jackie Bradley Jr. does have a little power. He did have a solid 2020, despite it was just a little over 200 plate appearances. Hit 7 home runs, batted .283, .264 on base, OPS plus of .118. That's very good. So yeah, depending on how much you believe in that, his previous three seasons, he has an OPS plus of .90. That's 1,600 plate appearances versus his most recent .217. So, you know, take it for what it's worth. He averages about 140 games a year, about 17 home runs a year, with an OPS plus of .90. But he plays really good outfield defense in a ballpark that has a very large center field at Fenway Park, whereas he would not have anywhere near the size of center field at Wrigley. So that's something you could project, you know, with Happ in left field, Hayward in right, and then assuming everyone else is back on defense in the infield, be probably the best defensive team in the league, and maybe if not the best, one of the best. So that I like it from that aspect, but from the offensive aspect, he strikes out a ton. He's not a very good hitter overall. He does have some pop. He does, you know, does a few things well, but it doesn't really make you better offensively at all.
Yeah, no, I think the ideal candidate, if you were looking for someone like this, would be Kevin Kiermaier. And you know, that's not happening. So
no.
Not unless you're trading Wilson Contreras, and that's probably for another episode. So, but we appreciate you guys sticking around today. We know it was a longer episode, but we actually had some stuff to talk about, so it was nice. And you know, Ryan, it's always great having you on, man. I miss talking to you. It's been like a couple weeks since we checked in on each other. But before we head out, any exciting Christmas plans and any last wishes before the end of 2021 for the Cubs, or 2020? Jeez, I'm already trying to jump a season.
Merry Christmas and happy holidays to everybody. And yeah, it's been a really weird ride through 2020, but you know, we're coming to the end. We're making it there. There's a lot of positives on the horizon. Just for me personally, you know, we bought a house in the last couple months. My daughter is doing really well in online school, and you know, things are going well for me professionally. I'm not writing as much anymore, but I did write a fiction novel. If anybody's interested, you can find, if you go to my Twitter, which is at Ryan Q Davis, you can find my pinned tweet talks about it. Or if you're familiar with Patreon, my Patreon is Ryan Davis Author. You could go for $2 a month. You can read my book, which comes out to like 10 bucks to read it, because I'm releasing it a chapter a week. So just wanted to do a shameless plug for that, but talk about things have been pretty good for me, and hopefully they're good for everybody else. We've got a vaccine on the horizon. So maybe there's a chance that by, you know, middle of summer, late summer, early fall, could be attending games at Wrigley Field. So just keep those things in mind. It's not all bad. We're getting there.
Yeah. There's a light at the end of the tunnel. We can see it now. It just sucks because now we're starting to see how crappy the tunnel we're in is. But but we appreciate you guys sticking through with us through 2020. There will be a couple more episodes through before the end of the year, so obviously. But I just didn't know if there'd be another time we'd get you on, Ryan. So I wanted to say thanks for coming on, man. I know we always kind of try and make these work during our crazy work schedules, but it's been fun doing this with you, man. So
yeah, absolutely. Here's to a better 2021.
All right, that will do it here for today's episode of Locked On Cubs. And make sure you subscribe in whatever podcast app you use, whether that's Google, Apple, Spotify, TuneIn app, Stitcher, iHeartRadio, whoever you listen, make sure you subscribe. Leave a 5-star review. Make sure you're following Ryan on Twitter at Ryan Q Davis. You can follow me on Twitter at Sean R. Sears. Make sure you check out Ryan's book. I retweeted the link he was talking about in this podcast, but he's been talking about this book for a while now, and he's really excited. He's put a lot of work into it, and if you guys like Ryan, you'll probably like the book. So check it out. I am actually a member of his Patreon, but I'm going to include his link as well from our Twitter, and I'll try and include it here in the description as well, assuming it doesn't get all wonky. Sometimes it does, so we leave that alone, but make sure you follow Ryan on Twitter at Ryan Q Davis for all updates on that. Follow me on Twitter at Sean R. Sears, and you can follow Locked On Cubs on Twitter at Locked On Cubs. With that, you guys enjoy the rest of your day, and as always, go Cubs.